This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. It's good to have you listening to Atlanta's number one sports station. It's number one sports show. We are counting down to April 24th. That is the first night of the NFL draft. And we will have all the coverage right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game for you. Mike and I will be down at Mercedes-Benz, as a matter of fact, getting you ready for all the coverage that night. But, Mike, as we talk about where our team is and what's going on with our team, first and foremost, let's talk about Braylon Trice, because how confident are you that he is going to come back and be a player, a difference maker for this defense? Now, I'll say this. At camp, we had a chance to visit with him briefly. We talked to him. He looked the part. We didn't see him because of the injury. Obviously, that happened, you know, in the preseason, Mike, but we liked what we saw, and we thought he had a really good chance to have an impact.
Yeah, and I know that, unfortunately, with the injury in Miami, we never got to see him on the field, and I've asked and I've joked around about it with D. Orlando Ledbetter from the HAC a couple times about, you know, I really like Braylon Trice. No, he's just a dude. He's just average. He was okay at Washington, but, you know, it's better competition, so I don't expect much from him. But I'm always, come on, D. So hopefully D will be wrong about that, and Braylon Trice, and I think the coaching staff and certainly the general manager would feel he's going to be more than that. If he can really pop and play off of Leonard Floyd or however they're going to use him, because I'm curious to see how these rotations work now with the guys that we've added. You know, Morgan Fox, and just, some would say, who's that? You know, role player from San Diego, and right. Now L.A. Chargers. But we got depth, but Ebiketie, that's why, you know, it's hard, because every time you and I go down this road, it's if he stays healthy, if he can impact Ruka, what IR last year. Haven't seen much of Troy Anderson in the last two seasons. These are all big cogs in the defense.
They are. And so as we talk about the players that we still don't know about, we are going to draft a player in the first round, and we're going to talk about what that might look like here in a second. But, Mike, one of the other things that's kind of just being thrown out there, and I think we've said this, and I know you've said it as a matter of fact, which is if we don't go to the playoffs, general manager is going to get replaced.
Correct.
So going into the season, regardless of what happens in this draft, we already know how free agency played out. We should have made the playoffs last year. Ifs and buts were nuts and blah, blah, blah.
We never go hungry.
But going into the season, you're telling me right now that Terry Fontenot is on the hot seat. And again, this is all predicated on whether or not we get to the playoffs, right? It's that simple.
That's it. I mean, 7 years. Now, the first three aren't on him. You could argue that you maybe give him a pass for 21 because he inherited that salary cap mess. But you got 4 years regardless. 4 years of no playoffs. 7 years for the franchise now. And I don't know any owner, and I know Arthur Blank hates to have to reset this thing because here we go again. Mm. But, yeah, I can't imagine that you're not going to get fired if you don't go to the playoffs. And maybe Raheem Morris with him if they don't go. I mean, you were 6-3. We all know that Kirk Cousins presented a set of circumstances that no one has ever seen, even here in Atlanta, where we've had some crazy stuff in the 60-some-odd years of this team. But, man, they got to go. They've got to. You got to win this division. Got to make the playoffs. I think everyone gets got if they don't.
All right. 404-726-0929. We're not saying that as a threat. We're simply saying it because it's what we believe to be true. And when Arthur Blank was asked about it, what did he say? Well, they know I was upset. I think he kind of put his foot down and said, of course, he was disappointed in the results at the end of our last season. Mm. But I also feel like knowing Arthur Blank like we do, he probably said, hey, it's poop or go home, win or go home. Like, we need to see progress. And, Mike, that's the issue. Did we feel like we saw progress last year? See, when Terry first got here, right, and the guy he got here with is no longer here, so we can't talk about him, and that's Arthur Smith. But you felt like, okay, first year, no expectations. Second year, okay, we got a little money. Third year, are we seeing progress as we continue to move through this general manager's tenure?
Yeah, I mean, the defense is as much of a mystery now than it was 4 years ago. You know, I mean, we had Dean Pease who came in, and I thought actually did a pretty darn good job. You know, Ryan Nielsen I thought was okay. But at the end of the day, you got to have the Jims and Joes. No, none of those X and O's you're going to try are going to work unless you get better athletes. We've missed on too many projects like Troy Anderson.
Yeah.
I think that Rook is a calculated risk, but I think you're a little bit higher on him than I am. Hopefully he does step up. But we've got to get – you cannot draft second-round and third-round players and not get anything from them, let alone the first-rounders that have been almost exclusively offense for this team. So this year – whether it's going to be a Georgia Bulldog or it's going to be, you know, somebody from somewhere else in the SEC, you've got to get – they've got to get impact. I know we joke around about it, but yes, even though – you know, you and I spent a lot of time this year about why we never draft Georgia players, and this precedes Terry Fontenot. But this is a year – if you want to keep your job, to your point earlier, you can't just go get a Georgia player because you want to placate the fan base.
Correct.
You got to make sure that Malachi Starks is better than Mike Green, is better than Pierce, is better than Shamar Stewart. And if Jalen Walker's available, then you go grab him too, right?
Yeah.
But it's got to work.
That's the thing. And I mean, that's not to get Georgia fans upset. I think it's just the way things are. If these guys are rated higher on your board, then you pick them and you believe in it. And if it doesn't work out, Mike, then you had as much conviction in that pick as you did when you picked Michael Penix. Either way, big decisions for our team as we talk about our Falcons. Find us, by the way, on social media. He's Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes and the radio show. It's Dukes and Bell 929. Follow the radio station at 929 The Game.
Hey, man, there is a big, big article on Zach Robinson and the offense by Mark Raimondi that came out, I think, yesterday from ESPN.com. So it's not behind a paywall, guys. You can find it if you want to read. Our buddy Mark comes on the show on a regular basis. But he basically talks about him going back to his time at Oklahoma, talks about, you know, working for Sean McVay, and then, you know, did this offense. What was this offense? Now, again, it's hard to kind of judge Zach Robinson because he was a first-year OC. First time, it's all on him. And then you had to deal with this Cousins thing, which is kind of unprecedented, right? But then you say, is he the right guy for what we're doing? Is he the right guy for getting Pitts to maximize his talents? I think so. I mean, I know he wants to run the football. We know we can do that with Bijan. But what if I say Zach Robinson, what was the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, look, I think he did a good job, and here's why. I think Zach was a victim of Kirk Cousins' inability to do the things he wanted to do in this offense. And when I say victim, I'm not talking about feeling sorry for him. What I mean is you've got a script of plays that you can't go to because your quarterback is unable to do the things you need him to do. And so then, Mike, I have to pivot and change my outlook on how I'm going to approach these games. Guys, it's why we were so limited with Cousins in the shotgun and some of the formations that we ran. So, Mike, I feel like he's got a feel. Listen, this is his first year calling plays, okay? Right. He's not Sean McVay yet. But I think he gets it. And I also think you put Penix in there and you give him some more mobility and some more options to open up that playbook. This looks completely different. Things he wanted to do, he wasn't able to do. So I would tell you how I look at him as I think he's capable. I think he showed last year that, hey, there were times and drives where you felt like, okay, he's changing things up. We don't look the same. He's trying to do some different things. But there was a limitation on the stuff that he wanted to get into on this offense as the season moved along, and you couldn't because of your quarterback.
And it's interesting. Again, it's a big article, but Mark Raimondi goes real in-depth on this. And you and I have talked about, and when we talk about Kyle Pitts, sometimes you say, on the I'm on his side argument,
right,
they use 11 personnel a lot. And they got Drake London basically working out of the slot, 39.1% of the snaps, according to Next Gen. So some would say the Puka Nacua role in that offense is maybe better suited, at least on the field, for a body like Kyle Pitts. At least, you know, how you'd think you'd use him in the kind of athleticism he presents. But they use Drake London in that role, which maybe creates, and I'm not going to say, you know, scraps, but maybe less opportunities for Pitts. And maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, and remember,
I mean, he's still got to do his job. He's got to run routes. He's got to block. He's got to do everything they ask of you.
But remember earlier in the season, too, you know, we got wind that Cousins was saying, you know, was he in the right places? We're talking about Pitts. Meaning, was he running the routes he should be running on certain plays? And it gave us the perception, not necessarily true, but it gave us the perception that maybe he wasn't where he was supposed to be, and so Cousins wasn't going to throw him the ball. Right?
Right.
So that played into, all right, us doubting like what you're talking about, which is, are they using him the right way? Either way, I feel like, you know, again, this is make or break. We're going to find out. And here's the thing, too. as an offensive coordinator, and Rod knows this, he's been on both sides of the ball, Coach Raheem Morris. Mike, if it ain't working with the dude, you change it up.
Right.
He's not forced to stay in that position. He's not forced to be the X or the Y or whatever the terminology is in an offense if you feel like he can do something else. You got to be flexible. And if you're not, you're not going to last. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they asked him to do one thing and he wasn't able to do it. If you're a good coaching staff, you go, look, he's not doing that well. We got to move him out here and play something different, do right. something different with the guy.
And, you know, something you and I have talked about, Zach Robinson's job is not here to validate Kyle Pitts.
Correct.
I would think, though, when they hired him, that, I mean, I can't imagine that that position doesn't come up in the conversation. T. Higgins was kind of more of your standard tight end. Statistically, he basically did the same stuff that Pitts was doing. So maybe it just Pitts is a bad fit for this offense. Now, we were just a few plays away from Darnell Mooney and London both being 1,000-yard receivers. Darnell had 992 yards, and of course Drake had a great year, 1,271 with 9 scores. But Mooney and London, they could have been 1,000-yard receivers. So maybe in this 11 personnel, Pitts is just not going to be the guy, which isn't good for his contract year.
Well,
unless they find a way.
Mooney's production fell off when Kirk Cousins' production fell off.
Right.
And then he got hurt at the end of the season, didn't play the last game or whatever. But Darnell Mooney, I think, proved to us he can play. And if we can deliver the ball down the field, which I hope Penix can, he's going to be an asset to us. The other part, Mike, I don't know about. Like, you know me. I have my reservations about what Kyle's going to do. And, you know, a friend of mine sent me the whole podcast this weekend. I heard y'all talking about it, Dukes. So I'm going to send you to the Cam Newton. I said, I know. I can see it. I hear you.
Yeah, that was, if you didn't, we played it last week. Penix, you know, talking, I should say, talking to Kyle Pitts going on Cam Newton podcast and basically said, hey, man, you know. Offense could get jammed up. Offensive line might be getting jammed up.
And by the way, I watched it because out of respect, I wanted to make sure that in context, we were talking about the things we need to talk about with him. But I liked his energy.
Right.
But I wish that energy was translated to the field. Like, I love what he was saying with Cam and how he was talking about things, but that's got to translate to the field, man.
Right. In the article that Mark Grimondi wrote about Zach Robinson, obviously he's pumping up his quarterback, sees the game, so fluid. Talked about, you know, he sees the game like a veteran breaking down film. You know, we saw Penix Jr., like, he did enough in that throw. Speaking of Pitts, I know I harp on it, but in the Commanders game, in a basically de facto playoff game for us on Sunday Night Football, Penix did enough to win that game after he made a rookie mistake.
Yeah. All right, guys. Plenty more to get to, including our visit with Grant McCauley. He covers the Braves and MLB for us. Chris Sale struggled yesterday.
Ugh.
And when that happens, you're not going to win a lot of games. We'll talk about the lineup changes as well, because they have happened today, and there's a reason why. It's on the way on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk about our Braves, and we got a lot to talk about. Grant McCauley is here with us. Grant, yesterday, as the game played out against the Rays, it's like, okay, Chris Sale, you knew he didn't have his best stuff. And Chris owned it after the game. 6 hits, 4 runs, 4 1/3. But, Grant, it's hard to win when you're struggling already, when your ace, or at least, you know, last year's ace, is not being a stopper. Talk about what you saw from Sale yesterday.
It is. I think it's just been more of a grind for him, and yesterday was probably the biggest example of that. The first couple of starts, I really kind of thought that he pitched better than the line was. Then we had that kind of confusing one the time before this where the velocity started to tick down, and then you wondered, okay, well, what's going on there? He was able to quiet those questions, but in terms of just overall consistency execution, he just couldn't find it. And there will be those starts. That does happen from time to time. There were so few of them last year, though, that I think it feels very out of character. But more to the point, the Braves certainly need their ace to step up. They need everybody to step up from a pitching perspective, because it's just a razor-thin margin of error for this offense, because it's simply not clicking. And the Braves are 29th in Major League Baseball with 49 runs scored. They're one of the worst clubs with runners in scoring position. One of the ones that's actually worse than the Braves, might surprise you, though, is the first-place New York Mets. They're actually hitting about 20 points lower with runners in scoring position than the Braves are. That surprised me, but I'm the person that's supposed to be looking for these numbers and trying to tell you what they mean, and I don't know what that means, other than baseball is a very strange game, and it feels like the Braves have been served a lot of very strange hands to try to make the best out of. And they're still having to kind of grind through it overall as a group and individually, as the case may be for a guy like Chris Sale yesterday.
Yeah, the Mets are batting .215, but they won 8 of their last 10, so go figure that one out. All right, Grant, we know that they're going to try to shake things up. When guys go, they're going to get rid of Snicker, I say, what's he supposed to do? He's only got, like, you know, 25 guys he can use. So we love Michael Harris, but he's just not shown it as a leadoff guy. They're going to shake it up, put Ozzie in leadoff. They're going to drop Harris into the sixth spot tonight. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, Ozzy against a lefty is kind of the big thing to take away. Whenever he gets a spot at leadoff, or a start rather, at leadoff, it's going to be because he's a right-handed hitter that wears out lefties, and why not take advantage of that, put him up near the top of the order. Harris, meanwhile, lefty on lefty, is a challenge for him. He's not got the ability to step over on the other side of the plate, though I'm sure he would like to if you've ever watched Money Mike take BP. He's been known to take a few swings from the right side, but that's not what, obviously, Ozzy Albies is doing. So they're going to continue to shuffle as necessary. I mean, clearly you know the guys that you need to produce. That's Austin Riley, that's Matt Olson, that's Marcelo Zuna. But how can the Braves get something going at the top of the order so that they can give those guys a little bit more of an opportunity to drive in some runs? And look, I know that they haven't been doing the job. I mean, that's pretty apparent. The Braves are batting 180 with runners in scoring position. As I mentioned, that's 28th in Major League Baseball. That's how you end up in the bottom couple of teams in runs scored overall. But some of these guys, I think they just have to, you know, number one, I think that there's been some luck that's been an issue this year in terms of batted ball. Nobody getting it worse, I think, than Matt Olson. But, you know, who cares about luck? You care about results, and I think the Braves are ready to see some of that. But a little bit of good fortune would also go a long way for this club because they just haven't seemed to have very much of that this year.
All right, tonight it's Grant Holmes as they take on the Blue Jays. I was saying earlier, you concerned about facing this lineup? Vlad Guerrero Jr. has yet to hit a home run. I mean, Springer has some kind of left wrist injury, I believe. I don't know if he's going to be available tonight. What do you know about the Blue Jays and this lineup?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think you have to respect every opponent. Early in the year, you may not be seeing necessarily, and we can say this certainly about the Braves, the best representation of who they are, and that can be taken a couple of different ways. Either they can be struggling, and all of a sudden they get right against you, like a Danny Jansen, a former Blue Jay, did for the Toronto Blue Jays, for the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend. And then you can have a team that's just not really got anything going, and all of a sudden they're able to, you know, pile up some runs and win a baseball game. And it's just, I think you have to treat every opponent pretty much equally at this point. And a lot of what the Braves have done so well and what I think speaks to their success is they're not a club that panics and overreacts. It's not going to make it any better. It's not going to make it any easier to win games. So I think the Blue Jays come in knowing exactly, you know, who and what they are in the toughest division in baseball year in and year out. That's the American League East. And we'll see what they're able to show the Braves here in the early season. I mean, Vlad Guerrero is Vlad Guerrero, I would say. So no home runs. 3 home runs in one game, whatever the case is, he's a guy that can do it, and you have to respect that and this lineup overall.
Is it safe to say that they rolled the dice with Jared Kelnick and it just didn't work? He is 6-4-37.
It's kind of hard to say because, I mean, as much as I can look at that and say, yeah, that's bad, it is. Objectively, that's not good at all. But I'd also look at it and say, you know, how far removed are you really from, you know, trying this thing out and wanting to see what he can give you? And if you're going to truly find out, are you going to let him play every day and just go ahead and let him go through it and see if he's able to come out the other side a better player? Now, the Mariners obviously tried that for a number of years. They gave up on it. They sent him over to the Braves. And I think that it's kind of magnified because Atlanta really wasn't able to do much else in terms of either upgrading its offense, upgrading its outfield. And the Braves outfielders, as a group collectively, beyond Jared Kelnick, I mean, this is a whole group, a unit, hitting 186 with 3 home runs and 7 runs batted in. That's not going to play over the course of 15 games, which the sample size is now. So I don't know if you make any final pronunciations about what Jared Kelnick is or isn't, but somebody and somebody's plural in that outfield certainly got to step up.
And again, I didn't know him because we didn't know what he was other than his baseball card got really good last year. But that's kind of why they went with Profar. Maybe they saw this coming.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, you knew that you had to get better somewhere and they were looking at ways to do it and they were obviously convinced that Profar was going to be able to come close to at least what he did a year ago. Obviously, we know how that story has played out at this point, so we don't have to rehash it all. But that was another swing and a miss. So when you put the gambit to move around a bunch of money and get Jared Kelnick and try to the upside play there, you know, he got some run in 2024. I think that a lot of other things went wrong, which didn't really allow for a normal, what I would call, I don't know if you can do this in the big leagues, but I'll call it that anyway, developmental year for him. I just don't think that the stars have not aligned. Let's put it that way. And obviously the Profar signing didn't help out matters either. And this outfield is in even worse shape as they wait for Ronald Acuna Jr. to hopefully be back in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Sean Murphy's return, you talk about those home runs. He's hit 2 of them, right?
He had 2-1 game a couple of days ago, but 3 overall in his first 4 games. And this is the Sean Murphy I think people were expecting to see.
Yeah.
Rockets all over the place. Even the double play he hit into at the end of the game on Sunday was 111 miles an hour. So this is a guy that is seeing it well. We've seen the new rec specs, so maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Maybe it's just being comfortable at the plate and feeling like you got your swing right. But as many folks as I saw out there that were like, oh, Sean Murphy, I mean, is he really that good? Do we really need him back? As a matter of fact, over the first week that you've had him, he's been pretty valuable more than a few times.
It is Grant McCauley, guys. And one of the things, Grant, we said earlier in the show, and I mean, no blank, Sherlock, they've just not put the full game together. You know, when the starting pitching, you know, can get you to a certain point, then the bullpen lets you down. And even the game they won Saturday, Iglesias got you a little nervous giving up the home run, which, you know, made it a one-run game. Do you feel that, I mean, we keep talking about that elusive spark that can be sustained. Is that provided when Strider gets up here, or is it really, we're really going to have to wait till when Acuna gets here, because that's going to be the cavalry coming over the hill?
No, it's going to be both of those guys, definitely. But on the other hand, I mean, I'd go back and look at that crazy Thursday game where the Braves, you know, had that pitching duel going on with Spencer Schwellenbach and Jesus Luzardo, and then you got to wait through a nearly 3-hour rain delay, and they come back and they play extra innings, and the bullpen holds, and Ozuna hits the walk-off home run, and I kind of felt like, okay, maybe that's the moment
right. That
everything kind of gets going. And obviously it comes from Marcell Ozuna, because who else? Because he's been the guy that has provided so many of these moments. But they're going to need, obviously, Spencer Strider back to help, I think, normalize their rotation, which now has already lost one all-star this year who may not pitch again in Reynaldo Lopez. Let's go ahead and take another all-star and put him in there. That will help. The bullpen still has some questions, some different roles that just have not really, I think, been established just yet. And you just got some guys where, you know, the more relievers you use in a game, the higher the chances are that somebody just doesn't have it that day. And that's not just the Atlanta Braves. That's all 30 teams. So you got to get that kind of stuff sorted out. But Strider, on the whole, I do think is a big shot in the arm for this club. But Acuna, after that, I think at that point, you really start to look around at what you've got. And if those two guys are back and healthy and hopefully able to do what they're capable of doing, I mean, you've got to put it together at that point. I don't think you can continue to question where's the offense coming from and how's this pitching staff going to look, because all the variables are out there. They're all on the table. What can this club do with all the pieces?
You worried?
Not really. It's still, I mean, the 0-7 start for the club had basically one foot in the grave. That's going to sting for a while. That's going to stick on them for a while, because they have to obviously go out and win a whole bunch of series to try to erase that or get a nice little winning streak going. But it's way too early in the season to get worried. I'm very much, and I've talked about this on From the Diamond, and I'll probably talk about it again over the next 5 or 6 weeks. Memorial Day is my first checkpoint to really look at a club and say, okay, what do we have here? But I talked about this yesterday on the show. The Houston Astros were 12-24 last year,
yeah. And
I was one of the many people thinking, all right, you can just start shoveling the dirt on them. They're done this year. And all they did was win the American League West. So stranger things have happened. I know nobody really wants to hear about the 21 Braves being under 500 all the way into the second half, but they were. So, you know, there's still time. But it hasn't felt good in a lot of different ways, and it hasn't looked good on the field with the struggles, particularly scoring runs. That's the kind of stuff that has to change to get you to believe and to buy in and to once again see this club for what it can be rather than simply what it is right now, which is a team that's struggling in a few different facets.
No doubt. Grant, great stuff. We'll see what they do against the Blue Jays starting tonight. Grant Holmes on the hill. We will talk tomorrow, my friend. Thank you again.
All right. Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
never should have fired the hitting instructor.
When I asked him if he's worried, he's right. There are checkpoints throughout the course of the season. He's right. Memorial Day is one of them. And then you get to early July. By that point, you start to realize what you are. And that is when teams start to realize, okay, we need to either be in the trade market or we need to start thinking about selling this thing.
Right.
And, you know, you get to the trade deadline at the end of July, and then all of a sudden, Mike, you're in August, September, and it's playoff time. But there are not many of them. So when you start this way, those dates, they seem to come up and creep up on you quicker when you're struggling and trying to figure it out than when you're winning. Because when you're winning, nobody cares about Memorial Day. You're like, oh, yeah, Braves are great. This Memorial Day, if we are under 500 and we are 7, 8, 9 games out, which potentially could happen, you're going to be looking at this differently.
So, again, talked about Money Harris. I still don't think Money Harris is a leadoff hitter, but as Grant said, it's more about the lefty on the mound tonight for Toronto with Easton Lucas, so you'll see Ozzy. But they got to do some things to spark it up. And I think Grant, you know, he kind of deferred there, but, you know, they went with Jurickson Profar because I think they realized that Kelnick, the ceiling, you've seen it, and he's just not that good. And a guy who's working tonight has been all over that. That's Chris Thomas, who really thought Kelnick was a bum and a bust from the jump.
He's cheap, and that's why they kept him.
Bingo.
It's not because he was producing. It was he's an inexpensive option, which was the case. They're not, you know, promising him anything. Mike, at this point, you need guys that are working in the lineup, and if he's not, he's got to go. Coming up, he's now going to be the guy asked, when are you going to win one?
Ah.
It's Dukes and Bell. We embrace the Masters night like no other state, and you saw it everywhere. You saw people wearing hats, whether they were there or had been there. You saw the shirts. You saw neighborhoods flowing with Masters conversation, and rightfully so. It is something that we're certainly proud of here in the great state of Georgia. But Rory comes in, Mike, and does what everybody had hoped that he would do, and that is complete the career Grand Slam. He now has five majors, but more importantly, to win in the fashion that he did. And we've been talking about it today here on Dukes and Bell. Glad to have you listening. I think there's two storylines, right, that are working here simultaneously. One, not as big because the bigger story is obviously Rory. But, you know, when you come in second in the last two U.S. Opens, you know, in 22, he came in second to Cam Smith at the Old Course. He's been so close in some of these majors, Mike. And so it felt that way on Sunday, like he was going to find a way to blow it.
Yeah, and when he misses that putt, when he hits the bogey on 18, and again, this was something that we'll walk it back chronologically. When you and I talked about it earlier, when he basically lays up, because DeChambeau is kind of imploding, so he plays a conservative in the middle of at the end of Amen Corner on 13. Instead of going for it in two, which, of course, he has that shot in his bag, he lays up.
Yeah.
And then he dunks the third shot in Ray's Creek, which is like, dude, if you're going to lay up, you can't do that. And you're thinking like, wow, this is where the wheels are going to come off. But then he's able to get back and get it together. He really was. He was a roller coaster. It was the best, highest rated, by the way, Masters Carl since 2018. So people responded to the soap opera element of it. But Rory then hanging on and, you know, in the playoff. And Justin Rose, by the way, Justin Rose left for dead. I give him credit for getting his ish together on the back nine. Two bogeys though on 14 and 17 ultimately cost him.
Rory led by two, fell behind by two. Led by five. Then you had a three-way tie. This thing was filled with drama. And listen, it got a life of its own. And we talk about this all the time now with social media. It used to be either you were watching it or you weren't, or you called somebody and said, are you watching this? Now, Mike, with social media, people are getting these updates and you're seeing your friends and you're all of a sudden like you feel like you're missing out if you're not watching it, even if right. You're not a golf fan. And that's kind of what happened. And then when they go to the playoff, I didn't know what was going to happen. I felt like Rory had gotten in his head after missing the putt in 18, and I said, boy, is he going to be able to put it back together? 314-yard drive, his second shot. I don't know if he could hit that ever again. I mean, he hit some great shots, but you talk about 4 feet and the birdie winner. Mike, he put it in the perfect place. It gets the roll back down the slope there, and Rory is a champion. That's the one story, and I'm going to let you hear Rory. The other is Bryson DeChambeau now becomes the guy that's going to be asked moving forward, when are you going to win a Masters?
Right.
And the tide has churned in for Rory, where this has been the conversation for, you know, the last 15 years. Now it's DeChambeau, who does have the game, but there were cracks in his game, and you saw it. I thought he caved under the pressure, Mike, when he had an opportunity.
And, you know, as we say, I mean, like, if you haven't been watching golf and you never saw this guy play before, you're like, why is he holding the club like that? You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, and we talked about, I always say, he's like Phil, because Phil was very idiosyncratic. Remember, Phil, he'd have like X amount of wedges or drivers, depending on the club, you know, the course he's playing. And Phil, sometimes you always felt maybe overthought it sometimes. And certainly DeChambeau is that guy. But, I mean, I like him. He interacts with the crowd. He won the U.S. Open last year. I mean, him and the fact that they asked him, you and Rory talk, said, nope, Rory didn't say a word to me. And then a lot of folks had a problem with Rory. Why? He's focusing on his thing. He doesn't really like DeChambeau as it is. So he's not going to pretend. They did show sportsmanship, as you said, before they teed, they shook hands. And afterwards, they shook hands. And he congratulated him on social media. But you're right. DeChambeau now, and he's the guy that's waving let's be honest, he's the standard bearer for LIV Golf. John Rahm did get respectable, got into an under par situation.
He did.
But he was a hot mess over the weekend. Dustin Johnson didn't make the cut. Koepka didn't make the cut. So the LIV Golf thing continues, but DeChambeau is still, he's going to be their poster boy.
Yeah, and again, I thought he crumbled under the weight of the moment and then made some bad decisions. Listen, his irons failed him, his accuracy was off, and his putting was crap. And at the end of the day, you're
how does he not get the distance right on 12?
It's ridiculous.
Now, again, for guys who don't know, that's over the water. That's Race Creek in front. That's the par three. And it's like, you got it down. You're talking about the wind, and you're talking about the directions and the vertices and the angle. It's 100. What's a 165-yard shot in your club? Hit that.
Yeah, it's pitch. It's like, a pitching wedge.
You know, like David, Peter Alice from BBC used to say, how about hitting it straight? Hit it straight. Aim for the freaking flag. What is going on with you guys?
Yeah, but it made for great television.
Right.
And at the end of the day, Rory is the champion. Let's hear from him talking about the winning putt on the playoff hole.
And through.
And he's made it! He's done it! It's a grand slam roar at Augusta National! Rory McIlroy!
Mike Tirico with the call, guys, as Rory wins the Masters. Here he is talking about his approach to the playoff hole.
I think I had 2 yards less in the playoff than I did in regulation. It was a little bit of a flatter lie as well. So I knew I had a perfect, you know, a three-quarter gap wedge was going to land into the slope and come back. So it was a good number. I just needed to make a good committed swing. And, you know, I made one at the right time.
It's great stuff. And again, we always talk about how, you know, if you are a golf fan, if you're not, even you can appreciate, you know, the beauty of the shot. And how about CBS? This is what I love with Nance and those guys. A lot of TV networks could take a cue from this. Let the thing, it's not radio. Tirico has to tell you what's doing. Mm-hmm. He's doing radio. Mm-hmm. But the way CBS is, let the thing breathe. And you saw Rory doing all his handshakes and his dapping up all the people from everybody on tour to, you know, his advisors and got a cadre of people, his managers, et cetera.
I thought it was the most beautiful moment, to be honest with you, because the story is the pitcher. It's
right.
Let it happen. And you're right. I talked about Nance earlier. He could have easily jumped in and tried to make it about him. Like, this is the most amazing thing mm-hmm. I've ever seen. He didn't say anything. So I think, guys, this helps, obviously, going into next year because, you know, we still have majors left. But obviously, with Bryson coming back, and, you know, the top 12 guys automatically get invited back. But Bryson coming back, and now the questions will be about him. Mm-hmm. It won't be about Rory. And Mike said it. Here's the other thing about Rory before we let you hear, you know, about his emotional reaction on 18. Does he take this now and just take off? Is all that pressure off, and all of a sudden, Mike, he's just winning majors, and just now he's starting to rack up dubs, and you're going, wow, okay, he truly is the best golfer in the world, because Scottie Scheffler is still that guy. Scheffler didn't put himself in position to do that, but in this particular tournament, like, it made you wonder, now that the pressure's off, does he do that?
Right, because remember, guys, you know, runners up, and we talked about losing the British Open. Bryson DeChambeau, by the way, said, oh, he choked at the British Open, ha, 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 when they were on the practice tee, which finally the media picked that up, and that made the rounds today on social media. But yeah, now maybe they come in bunches. That's the big question, because it wasn't just that he couldn't win the Masters. He couldn't win the British. He couldn't win the PGA. He couldn't win the U.S. Open the last 11 years.
Mm. All right, here's Rory talking about that emotional, as he drops to his knees, reaction. He's crying. It was great.
I would say it was 14 years in the making from, you know, going out with the 4-shot lead in 2011. You know, feeling like I could have got it done there. And yeah, there was a lot of pent-up emotion that just came out on that 18th green. And a moment like that makes all the years and all the close calls worth it.
And as we said, man, and let's be honest, Carl, call it what it is. It's kind of like the post-Tiger world now.
It is.
As much as you and I, we keep the torch lit for Tiger, it just seems like we're just never going to see him compete at this level. So this is your cast of characters the next couple of years.
Yeah, and Tiger put out a nice post last night, actually, and congratulating Rory. You know they're good friends. And, you know, he always has wanted to see Rory win this thing. But he says, Tiger says, welcome to the club.
Right on.
Completing the Grand Slam at Augusta is something special. Your determination during this round and this entire journey is shown through. And now you're part of history. Proud of you. So that was from Tiger Woods last night. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. One other Rory soundbite I want you to hear. And it's just, I don't know, man. When you say, hey, I can call myself a Masters champion, nobody could ever take the green jacket away from him, Mike. I love to see him win multiples, but we know there are very few guys who have done it, right? We're talking about like four guys in the history of golf when you're talking about multiple wins at the Masters. But here's Rory.
It feels incredible. This is my 17th time here, and I started to wonder if it would ever be my time. And I think, you know, the last 10 years coming here with the burden of the Grand Slam on my shoulders and trying to achieve that, I'm sort of wondering what we're all going to talk about going into next year's Masters. But I'm just absolutely honored and thrilled and just so proud to be able to call myself a Masters champion.
Mm. Crazy, man. And I know you talked about your spread as you guys were enjoying, because that's what happens.
A lot of
folks,
bars, I know over at the Battery and Antique, a lot of guys had a whole Masters theme set up for the weekend. But
drinks,
yeah,
the whole nine.
In our neighborhood, a lot of guys play golf, so we're all hanging out and just smoking cigars and eating tomato cheese sandwiches, thanks to the wife, and just having a good old time, man.
Yeah, we did the same thing, man. And it's just, you have to embrace it. And that's what I was saying earlier about our great state. Like, nobody embraces the Masters like we do. Mm-hmm. You can go other places and people dig it. They like it. They're going to watch it. Here, it's different. And, you know, the crazy thing is, when you see somebody with a Masters hat, if you really know what's going on, what do you do? When'd you go? Yeah, right? Exactly. It's the first thing you ask. When'd you go? And somebody always says, oh, well, no, I had a friend, and they got me a hat, but I haven't been. Man, I want to go so bad. Right. I play with a guy who's been playing 50 years. He's a great golfer, and he's like, I just want to go one time. And he may not ever get a chance because those badges, Mike,
ain't cheap.
They're hard to come by. But he's one of these guys, like so many of us, that just dream about having an opportunity to go. And I've said it. Put it on your bucket list. You saw how it was. You saw the patrons on Sunday and how they stayed. And obviously the energy of the crowd. There's just nothing like it, man.
Pretty wild, you know, from people who just drive out to spend the day there to 150 private planes at Augusta Airport. That video we saw was pretty wild. Our friends from Wheels Up and everybody else that got out there. But, yeah, it was amazing. I haven't been now going on. Wow, it's been over like 12 years now. I know you were there in 21.
Yeah.
Thanks to Andy Bunker, by the way, for getting me the lid this year for this one. So, yeah, man, it's something that we had fun. We weren't even there on Wednesday. There was so much energy out there at Twin Peaks,
no,
just down the street.
I agree. It's just about being there. But, you know, the part is, like, it takes planning. You're not just going to roll up to Augusta and be like, hey, I mean, you could obviously drive back to Atlanta, but you're just not going to roll up and be like, hey, I need a room. Either way, congratulations to Rory. It was amazing. Hey, we got a big show tomorrow coming up.
Let's talk about our Hawks. I don't like this matchup with the Magic, man. I know this game that they played yesterday didn't really mean anything. None of the big guys, you know, Banchero didn't play and Wagner didn't play. Trey didn't play for the Hawks either. So I don't like the matchup.
Well, look, you got to find a way to get it done. If you win, we said this, you get a chill until Saturday and then you start a series with the Celtics, which would be ideal. If you don't win, you turn right back around and you're playing on Friday. Loser goes home.
Yeah, it's the winner of the Heat and the Bulls, and we can't bring home the bacon against the Magic tomorrow.
Yeah, so lots to get to there. Hey, man, as we finish up, I do want to mention this, Mike, and Chris has got you coming up for the night show. Make sure you stay right here. I saw this story over the weekend, and it broke my heart. And then to see what Malik Nabers had to say about his former teammate, Kyron Lacy. If you didn't see this, this young man was going into the NFL draft. Malik Nabers obviously was at LSU when Lacy was there. And he just put a post out that said, you know, I'm numb, I'm sad, I'm downcast, I'm heartbroken. And he was talking about Lacy. If you don't know the story, he crashed his vehicle while being pursued by cops Saturday night. Police said that when they removed him from the car, he was already gone. But his death comes 4 months after he was arrested for allegedly involvement in a car that crashed and killed a 78-year-old man in Louisiana.
He was a Marine veteran, yeah.
So he was having a lot of issues just mentally coping. And the point is, if you need help, get help. If somebody's out there and you hear this and, like, you're wondering, hey, I can't move on, I can't go on, just get help. Because there's so many people today who are talking about Lacy and what a great kid he was and what a bright future he had. But, Mike, he was really dealing with some stuff and wasn't able to work through
it. He had to make some better decisions a couple months ago.
All right, man. We got to get out of here. Stay tuned. Chris is on the way. It's Dukes and Bell.